For and that's been, the issues of computer literacy have been particularly difficult this last year, where we're seeing people, remotely, seniors can obviously know how to use telephones, and most, in fact, know how to use computers fairly well, because that's the world we live in. And so if they want to see their grandkids, they've got to know how to use FaceTime or something like that. But it is often a hurdle of how to get documents from clients when they don't have the sophisticated computer skills to when you say, send me a PDF, you have to explain what that is. And telling them to, how to get things to you is not always easy. And then there's the longer term issue, and this is particularly, I see this a lot in my practice here in North Carolina, and it's probably the same most places, is older folks have a greater likelihood a lot of times of having grown up somewhere where they didn't get the education that they would have now. So there's a lot more just general literacy issues where they don't, they can't read or read as well. And so that's something we have to deal with a lot of times more with seniors. And then there's also the dementia and memory issues that you often have to deal with, which are come on a sliding, on a spectrum where it's not, all or nothing. It's just a greater degree of confusion sometimes.
And do you see maybe some of those issues popping up in terms of them being more susceptible to pre-bankruptcy fraud, or just maybe making poor financial decisions before they get into your office?
Yeah, there's the range of what I would consider fraud, and others might not. But that seniors tend to fall prey to more often. They're targeted by the various internet scams. They also fall. They also will, in my experience, more often attempt to go through the various debt settlement programs that exist out in the world, which often seem not that dissimilar from internet scams too. And so by the time they've come in to see me, they've used substantial amounts of their resources in ways that haven't, to try to resolve their debts unsuccessfully, where they not only have the same or more debt, but they also have less assets.
And another factor with, it was just a fact, right, that they're older, so they're also more likely to pass away during a case, and that raises issues as well.
Sure, in a Chapter 7, a debtor's death anyone's death is always sad, but in a Chapter 7, it's usually not really going to affect things terribly much, because mostly it's a snapshot. In a Chapter 13, it's a much bigger problem, obviously, because if someone has to continue to make the payments, and various courts have various degrees of patience or tolerance for debtors who have died. And one of the courts I appear in front of, if the debtor's died, they want to hear that we've contacted the family to see if they're going to continue the case. And another, there's the rule of there are no dead debtors. So as long as they keep quiet and don't ask for anything, which is fortunate, most dead people do, then the case can continue. But if you need to modify the plan or anything like that, that's not going to happen in it. And conversion is also complicated, because you need to have someone who has authority to agree to that conversion. So those aspects all become more complicated and more likely with seniors and the elderly.
There was just the Bill Rochelle's letter the other day, just reported on the issue personal financial management course, right? If you need the discharge, if you have an estate issue, is the estate get the discharge if the debtor has passed away and obviously then unable to complete the personal?
Right, and in addition, you can get that excused is fine, but the difficulty is that if a debtor becomes non-responsive, you don't know whether that's because they've for what reason that is. And this is true for anybody of any age, whether they've just gone away or whether they've passed away or they're in a nursing home or what have you. So sometimes finding, chasing that client down or their family members to find out, all right, I can file my motion to excuse the debtor education course. Again, that's why in a lot of cases, we prefer to have them get that done at the beginning of the case so that we don't have to worry about it at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. And that might be something to think about, right? And early do that in the early stages. If there's a concern, especially in a chapter 13, that that's not going to be able to be done later. And it doesn't necessarily have to be death. It could be a matter of just competency later on.
Competency, or they've just moved away, and debtors do that, and they don't always leave the best forwarding addresses for folks.
Yes, yeah. So a problem with this research as well. So when we're trying to contact debtors. So moving on, then, just thinking a little bit more, just moving from the demographics to what these cases look like. So kind of one of the themes, I remember Ed, you kind of jokingly asked me, so is the theme here that we didn't need to talk separately about people over the age of 65 because their bankruptcies do look a lot alike in to other bankruptcies. I kind of like to say that they're alike except where the ways that they're not. And there's ways that they're not, and one of the ways that we see that they're not is that the people who are over the age of 65 are less likely to have a pre-bankruptcy lawsuit in the statement of affairs. And so when we look at the statement of affairs and say, you know, was there a lawsuit? Yes, 29%, still a high number, but much less than the almost half of the people under the age of 65 who have that. So do you have any thoughts on why that might be, why we'd see less people over the age of 65 less likely to be reporting a lawsuit?